Now, it is 9:40, we're on the record, and it is a Thursday, which means it's time for Language Lab. This week on Language Lab, we're talking about cultural differences in how we express our opinion. How is the way we express what we think influenced by our cultural and linguistic background? Here to chat with us is Dr. Celeste Rodriguez-Luro, Chair of Linguistics and Director of Language Lab at the University of Western Australia. Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning.
So super excited to have my brain expanded once again on Language Lab. Let's get into it. Are there cross-cultural differences in how we express our opinions?
Yes, such an interesting topic. I agree. And I just wanted to say once again, thank you to our wonderful UWA linguistics intern, Grace Shepherd, for all the work she's done producing this segment and for all the work she's done since she joined us back in August. She's very close to wrapping up her internship, so thank you, Grace. Okay, so expressing opinions. Expressing opinions is such a big deal. We do it all the time. We need to do it in a way that's not going to cause harm, and this harm can really be about ourselves and our social image. And it may obviously also be about other people that we're interacting with. And different cultures have different social expectations around how one will express themselves and their opinions. And this is so important in linguistics because our cultural values are often reflected in how we use language. So for those for our listeners who are thinking, well, how is expressing opinion relevant to linguistics? Well, it is very relevant to linguistics because we, most of the time, our opinions will be expressed through language. So one thing that we usually talk about when it comes to expressing opinions is whether we live in a culture, we are members of a culture that favors directness and being quite blunt and straightforward about what it is that we think about an issue, or whether we are members of a culture or cultures where collectivism and indirectness are favored. So it's a bit like this, being oriented towards individualism as opposed to being oriented towards collectivism. So if you come from a more individualistic culture, you're more likely to be okay with being more direct about the way that you express your opinions. If you come from a collectivistic culture, a culture that holds collectivistic values, you're more likely to want to be very indirect about the way that you express your opinions.
So are there any examples we're talking about, different cultures, collectivism, individualism. Would you say Australia is, we have quite a direct approach to expressing opinions?
That's such a good question. And I was actually going to touch on that when we get to fun facts, because
Ooh.
I thought that was a fun fact. That generally, but this is such a good question, so thank you. So the main issue around Australia is that when you kind of read up on the topic, Australia, the United States, Canada, and so on usually come up as cultures. And again, we're looking at mainstream culture. We know that Australia is extremely multicultural. But when we look at Anglo-Celtic sort of mainstream culture in Australia, it's usually defined as favoring directness. So people being okay with being quite straightforward. So that's what you read when Australia is compared against cultures and societies in Japan, in India, in China, and so on. However, in my experience, and again, I am a multicultural individual. I've been living in Australia for a long time, but I was born and bred in raised in Argentina. So in my opinion, Australians, especially Anglo-Celtic Australians, can be quite indirect. When you compare what you are likely to hear and be exposed to in a place like Argentina, or say places like Germany or the Netherlands. And so what this sort of teaches us is that this idea about how we express opinions on the kinds of cultures and societies that we come from, we need to be really careful that just to understand that everything's very gradient and very fluid, and that these are tendencies, but there's tons of intersectionality as well. So when we talk about Australia and mainstream Australia, generally speaking, I would say that people will soften the blow. So say you're expressing an opinion and you wish to be quite blunt about it. Generally in Australia, especially once again, mainstream Australia will favour the use of softening devices, devices that allow people to save face, and face is basically your self-image in society. And so you hear things like the use of, the kind of the expression of or the framing of things as though they're quite tentative. So things like the use of perhaps and maybe and you might or I might and I wonder. You know, it's always sort of framed, opinions in Australia tend to be framed as though you're kind of tentatively sharing this. And it's not like you're not 100% sure about what you think. People are generally, a lot of the times, we're very clear on how we feel about something, but the packaging of the message is done in a way that will preserve your own self-image, but also, and importantly, the self-image of those you're addressing.
That is so fascinating, Celeste, because my understanding was that Australia is quite an individualist culture.
Yes.
But you're saying that we do have quite an indirect way of expressing our opinion.
It depends on what you're comparing it to, right? So if I was born and bred in a culture where it's quite okay to say to people, this is right or this is wrong, and people will not necessarily be taken aback. That's just the way that people communicate. And you can, if we just move just for a moment, just for the sake of explanation, just move away for a moment from the expression of opinions and think about a different sort of speech act or, you know, something that we do in context, such as requesting something. You'll have people in societies where it's quite okay to order someone to do something. For example, open the window, will you? Something like that. And it's quite direct. In Australia, that tends not to be very widely accepted. People will tend to be a little bit more indirect, so they might just suggest that they are cold or hot. And so then that's like a hint that someone may open the window. And so, again, when it comes to comparing across cultures, it really depends on what you are comparing, what social groups you're comparing. Now, if we look at Australia and places like Japan, the main difference between these two, mainstream Australia and mainstream Japan, is that in places like Japan, the group, the community, the collective, this idea that if you say or do something that is threatening your own face, you're actually threatening the collective face in a way that is just, there's so much reputational damage that you just don't want to do it. So that's where it's quite distinct. So I think we need to separate, for the sake of understanding mainstream Australian culture, I would separate directness and indirectness from individualism and collectivism. So I think Australia potentially is, I agree with you, 100% individualistic, and that's why there's so much learning and unlearning to be done to be able to work with First Nations Australia, for example, which, you know, obviously way more collective and group-oriented culture. So that's a huge cultural, there's a bridge there that needs to be crossed. But when it comes to being very direct, that is not something that a mainstream Australian will generally take well. Again, it depends on relationships, right? How close, social distance, how close are you to someone? Are you addressing, are you expressing your opinion in front of someone you live with and have known for 20 years? In which case you're probably going to be a bit more direct because you kind of should feel safe to express yourself in that way. But if you're addressing someone you literally have just met, potentially that will impact how you express yourself as well.
Yeah, I think I get it. So so individualistic cultures and collectivistic cultures, collectivism cultures, they don't really have any kind of link to whether someone is direct or indirect. It's more to do with your relationship to the person you're talking
to? Yeah, it's all to do with relationships.
Okay.
And so whether you're preserving your own face, as we said, face in this context means self-image, are you protecting your own self-image, or will you go out of your way to protect someone else's self-image? So say you're interacting with someone and someone expresses their opinion in a way that is just slightly different from what mainstream people are used to doing in a particular context. If you're in a place like Japan, everyone will work together to try and save collective face so that there's no embarrassment. Whereas in a culture where individualism is to be respected, people will probably go like, well, if that's what they wanted to do, if that's what they wanted to say, then it's up to them. It's their problem. That person's problem individually, and that person is to kind of make up for that reputational damage. So the impact that it has in terms of the group and, you know, the audience that is exposed to this, whatever it is happening, will be very different, or at least will be dealt with very differently. That is not to say that we don't care about the collective here in Australia. That's not at all what it means. It's just in those moments where you're interacting with people, what's your sort of second nature thing that you do to save face, to protect self-image, and will you think of your own self-image before you think of the self-image of the group? And that's kind of where it comes from.
So we've mentioned, you know, saving face. What are some other ways that people might show agreement or disagreement?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. And it kind of relates to the concept of positive or negative politeness. So we're looking at whether someone is actively trying to uplift another person as a way of showing group solidarity. That would be positive politeness, where you do something very explicit to lift someone up, or whether you are trying to repair or avoid negatively impacting the image of another person, which is negative politeness. The terminology, as usual, is a bit confusing. But again, it's whether you're uplifting someone consciously or whether you're really trying to repair or avoid negatively impacting people. And so depending on cultural norms or personal preference, because a lot of people also will kind of be slightly different to a cultural norm depending on what they prefer, a person may show politeness by putting themselves down to uplift someone else. This is very common in Australia, and I think it relates to the tall poppy syndrome. So if someone does really well and they're standing out, the expectation is that they somehow will, by what they say and what they do, of course, but here we're looking at language, they'll put themselves down. And in doing that, they will make other people feel better about themselves.
Yes.
I'm sure that you've experienced.
Yes, I can think of so many examples in just day to day.
It's nothing special, you know, happens all the time. I didn't even try that hard enough. I'm just lucky.
Yeah.
You know, you just put yourself down so that by doing that, you're uplifting everyone else. And that, in my opinion, is a wonderful thing. In other cultures, and again, there's no right or wrong, it's just the way it is, it will be quite okay for someone to receive praise and for them to even build that praise up by not putting themselves down in any way. And that is likely to be seen as arrogant in Australia, but it's not seen that way elsewhere.
Yeah, so interesting. I think before you did share your fun fact about expressing opinions in mainstream Australia. Did you have any other fun facts you'd like to share with us before we say bye-bye?
I don't know if it's fun, but it's just interesting, the use of formal speech. I feel like formal speech, for some reason, is being eradicated, or at least people are not using it as much since, you know, social media and new generations, and there's like a leveling of this, you know, hierarchies and so on. But formal speech is really useful, especially when some sort of face has been threatened and things need to be repaired. So say someone has said something that has hurt someone's feelings or has caused some reputational damage, you generally will see quite a formal email come through or a formal address of some sort by someone. And that's a way of repairing as well. And what's really lovely about language is that it really allows you to establish social distance between people. So depending on what language you use, you're kind of framing. It's the language that you use is sort of indexical to the relationship. You can see how close people are, but you can also see how distant people are. And in some societies, this is expected. For example, to show respect to the elderly, to show respect to women, to show respect to professors, to show respect to doctors, whatever that may be, priests. And there's a whole language that goes with that. So maybe one day we will actually tackle that separately, but it is related to politeness, so I wanted to mention it.
Yeah, well, I would love to expand on that on another episode of Language Lab. Thank you so much for joining us today, Celeste, and thank you for Grace for doing the research for this one.
Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Celeste Rodriguez-Luro, Chair of Linguistics and Director of Language Lab at the University of Western Australia.